coming towards that.
Yeah. New face over there.
And then I've been hearing about it.
Oh. Thank you. Call the Senate Health and Human, excuse me, the Senate Committee on Human Resources to order.
Fantastic.
We have one bill in front of us today, and some important personage is waiting to testify, so I will go right into a public hearing on Senate Bill 9 and ask the staff to describe it.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 9 allows employers to provide coverage under an employer-sponsored health plan to an officer or an employee while that officer or employee is absent on military leave.
Senator Courtney, do you wish to go ahead with the testimony? I'll leave it up to you, and you can introduce your testifiers there. And
thank you, Chair Fisher and members of the committee. I'm Peter Courtney, and I live at 2925 Island View Drive Northeast here in Salem, and I'm a state senator, District 11. Senate Bill 9 is a bill I introduced for Paul Evans, who's a captain in the National Guard. He has been on active duty now for some time. He formerly was the mayor of Monmouth, and he has been, I don't know how many months now he's been out there on active duty, but I introduced this bill on behalf of him, or he requested me to do so. And while it does not personally benefit him, I do think the concept is one that is worthy of consideration. This is a simple piece of legislation that allows a public employee who is called to military service, his or her family, to continue the health plan coverage they currently receive. Right now, when these employees are called up, they and their families have to switch to other health care coverage, and sometimes even in the middle of a course of treatment. You can imagine the significant disruption to family life that change like that might bring. This should not be. Now, the legislation that's in front of you, members of this committee, as it is drafted, is permissive. It is not a mandate. It is not mandatory, as the language has been set out in Senate Bill 9. I also believe that it applies primarily to members of the National Guard, reservists, and those types, I believe. Now, what I have here, the certified smart witnesses that will be able to testify extensively on that, but I believe that that's the case. I also understand that some private companies are continuing coverage of their employees on military leave. We're talking state employees here now. I'm not talking public employees for cities or counties, because it's my understanding I cannot reach them through this legislation. So I'm only talking about state employees. At this time, their number is only 39. Should we go into what we call war with Iraq, I think the 39 will increase. But again, I'm not certified smart enough to tell you that. I do know that these individuals have left their jobs and their families to protect us and our families. It is only fitting that we look out for them and their families, and this little piece of legislation attempts to do that. We communicated with Paul Evans, and you have a copy of his testimony as well. You'll notice that he's very carefully the wording of it. He does not identify the fact that I believe he's a captain. He doesn't identify his rank or anything like that in that, because he has to be careful that he is not perceived as speaking for the National Guard or anything like that. He's speaking as an individual. He cannot be here today. As I said, he is deployed this time in Florida. I do not know if he actually would go over if we do get into a situation involving a fight or a war, as we say, with Iraq. So his testimony speaks for itself in writing. I know otherwise he would love to be here. With that, I think you should please allow the general and the colonel to testify too on this piece of legislation, as they could give you all kinds of information on the background of the individuals involved and whether or not this benefits them and how it might. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee.
Mr. Chair, I have a question of the Senate President, but I will wait if he's planning to stay.
I do plan to stay.
Okay.
Major General Bergen.
Hey, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm General Bergen, the Adjutant General for the State of Oregon, which obviously controls both the Air and the Army Guard for our state. The issues on the bill is, I think, straightforward for us. It allows our state agencies and local government to elect to provide health coverage for their employees who are called to federal active duty. It changes our stipulation. It allows an employee of the state or local government to be absent for 4 years. Currently, it extends it to 5 under the new request. We are in full support from the Oregon National Guard's perspective. But And I'll talk a little about the issues the senators write as far as the numbers, 39 individuals currently affected by this and under the federal call-ups. But we have one issue, and we'll propose an amendment regarding state active duty, which wouldn't be covered under a federal call-up. Last year during the fire season, we had several Oregon Guard personnel ordered to state active duty, and the result was that some of the employees were taken off the health coverages, and the issue, because we worked most of the issues, and I think we resolved them all by intervention with each specific agency, and in two cases, we took the person off state active duty and sent them back to their state agency so that they would not suffer loss of their health coverage. And from a perspective not only of state crises, which the last 3 to 4 years have been significant also, last year was our longest period of state active duty in our history for continuous days, but you're also seeing the emergence of Homeland Security, Homeland Defense as our new department in the federal perspective issues guidance, and Northern Command, who's been established within the continental United States to protect our borders and counteract a terrorist activity. We're not sure where that'll go, but in fact, that could also include many state active duty call-ups in support of Homeland Security. So as we see now, it's what's happening in the future. We would propose an amendment to provide health that would provide health insurance coverage by a state agency or subdivision of a state for National Guard members who are called to state active duty for periods of 30 days or more. And that's the only change we would require or looking at as far as that perspective from the original bill.
Okay. Anything to add, Michael?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Colonel Mike Caldwell, the Deputy Director of the Military Department. The only thing I would add is that Jalee Honeywell is here from DAS. We've been working with DAS for 2-3 years now, trying to a constant effort to try to improve, I guess, the laws as we know them today to accommodate some of the unique circumstances that we end up running into on both state and federal activations. And we're in an unprecedented time right now in the Oregon Guard, and this would help some of those families that are left back who are trying to roll over particular needs of an individual with a maybe you have a family member who has a physician who's specialized. Suddenly we throw them into turmoil by mobilizing their loved one, the breadwinner, and they end up under the TRICARE system, which is completely inadequate compared to what most insurances that you and I would call good. And the other problem is, particularly in rural Oregon, and you're going to see in the paper here in the next day or two, we're calling up units in Bend and Burns here in the next week. And there's very few health care providers to begin with in those areas, and many of them don't take TRICARE. So in effect, we've left these families in a lurch. And I think it's real important that we look at that situation if we can and see if we can't help them out where we could. We would prefer, the good senator said this is not mandatory. Frankly, we would prefer that it was, but I understand the reality. But the fact still remains that we have unique problems that active duty people simply don't experience because they're all cloistered in and on an active duty base with their families. We're not. We're in Main Street America, and our soldiers are out there butcher, baker, candlestick maker, doing and making a living every day. So this would be good. This would be a good bill for us, and we like it.
Senator Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Cornyn, could you talk to me about why we can't mandate this? I mean, we're talking state agencies, correct?
That's Chair Fisher, Senator Brown, that's correct.
Why can't we mandate it?
Chair Fisher, Senator Brown, you can if you want to. I just wanted to get the bill passed. I mean, if you're asking Peter, to me, these men and women, if they're out there fighting a war, they're putting their lives on the line for us. Or if they're fighting forest fires, that's trying to save Oregon by Oregon. I think, that's a judgment call, and I just thought I'd make it permissive, for at least I could get a shot at it that way. I was concerned if I made it mandatory, I might not get the votes.
Senator Paul.
And I would assume that some agencies or some aspects of government, et cetera, would find this language at least allowing them to do this, where if they don't have the language to allow them to do it, they might not be able to do it. But at least this allows them to do it, where a mandate right now would require us to determine how many people this involves and have a fiscal impact that would probably delay getting this done. And
Chair Fisher, Senator Carlino, it's my understanding this doesn't cost anything right now because they're already there. It's figured in, to tell you the truth. Now, you might want to talk to others in the state, but it doesn't cost us because they're already in it. That's why, in a way, the mandatory versus permissive. But you might want to look further into that. And I can't quite explain it to you in terms of a DAS approach, but I'm not even sure that there is a cost if you did make it mandatory because they're already on the payroll. They're already figured in the computations, assuming that they don't stay in active duty for 400 years or something like that.
Well, you've got up to 5 years now, and that's quite a long time. I mean, if they're not actually working for the state, and that, I guess, was my concern, Senator Morissette.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I was going to raise that same question, and maybe in light of what Senator Fisher says, a reasonable period of time where it be mandated. But I would like us to look at this further before we, with the idea of adding some language to it.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes. Senator Burdick.
You said that this only, you only have 39 public employees who are affected now. Do you have any reason to believe that that might go up in the future, or does this seem like a fairly stable number?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, well, it is really hard to tell. We could look at how many state employees that we have on our rolls, but it's hard to tell when the federal government will, in fact, alert and mobilize and deploy an organization. This is very unprecedented times we're in. More than likely, 90% of the times between now and the year 2000, it's not going to affect that many individuals. That's barring World War III, the North Koreans come across the peninsula. You just don't know, or a significant homeland security issue within our borders. I think the real issue is more equity. I don't think it's going to affect large numbers. I would never see it 50 or 60, maybe at the maximum around the state at any one given time, and that would be for a spike period of time. And we're talking about some timing. One of the other issues is under a presidential selected reserve call-up, you've got 270 days. Under a partial mobilization, which most of these soldiers and airmen are going under now, the orders are all for 1 year, but a little proviso that barring or based upon current situation, up to 2 years. Our 1042nd Air Ambulance very well may exceed their 1 year. So when you're looking at mobilizations for the federal perspective, again, barring World War II, where our 41st Division soldiers were gone from 1940 to 1945, barring some catastrophic, cataclysmic worldwide event, more than likely deployments are all going to be within a six-month to a year time frame, to answer the question on timing. With rare exceptions. As far as numbers of state employees, I think you're kind of throwing the dice. It depends upon the type of unit. Like I say, 39 right now is probably the highest we have had since World War II. And I don't know how many of our 41st Division veterans were state employees at the time or worried about health insurance.
And Mr. Chairman,
yes,
not to be morbid or anything, but this applies to health insurance. What about life insurance? What happens to life insurance?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, of course you're covered. You have coverage we have coverage as National Guard members and reservists. There's also, of course, it maintains that coverage as you go Title 10, active duty. Now, the state coverage, as Mike and I are state employees and we have a certain amount of life insurance coverage, I would assume, as long as you're enrolled in the benefits plan, I would assume, barring a war clause, which I haven't even looked at mine, that those premiums are continued to be collected and the insurance is still in effect as long as you're within the plan. But that's an assumption on my part.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burdick, I think it falls back into the category of if you're not making the premium payment, then you'll fall at default and you won't be covered. The real issue, and that can be an issue, but I think the real issue here is, and back to the chairman's question of 4 or 5 years, typically we don't deploy people for over 2 years. I mean, it hasn't happened in 35, 40 years now, probably since the Berlin crisis when we had massive call-ups for the Berlin airlift. And so when you're looking at the reality of this thing happening, often this is uncharted territory we're in. Again, 39, 40 people, maybe as much as 100. I can't imagine it being over 100. But when you look at what happens to those families, and I'll give you an example, and this is a federal problem, really, if you really want to talk to it in those terms. It may correct itself as time goes on and it becomes aware, because we're making our congressional delegation aware of it. But a family sitting in Burns, Oregon, who can't find a care provider, has to either go to Bend or some other locale that will have somebody to take TRICARE. When they get there, because their husband and them have two different zip codes, because the husband got mobilized at Fort Lewis, they're automatically, the best they can do is an 80-20%. 80% paid by the federal government, 20% paid by the individual. Now, if you're under the health care that I'm under the state of Oregon, you know, I have a $10 copay, and that's all I pay. You know, maybe that's too generous, maybe it isn't, but the point is, you're putting that family in a real hardship, and through no fault of their own, they're doing their duty. They're simply doing their duty. And they get, and this is what Paul was bringing up when he went to Senator Courtney, I think, was he saw this happen to members of his unit, who really ended up, because of the rules and regulations of the federal government, how they choose to offer this thing they call TRICARE, which is very inadequate in most cases, it's really problematic. So that's why he brought it up.
Chair Fisher, let me just add one thing to that comment. Is we've had some cases in the past where the individual was under private insurance, but it's the same concept, where we actually didn't mobilize that individual because his child had something like cystic fibrosis or something significant that, in fact, wasn't going to be covered under TRICARE, even though they were serving the federal government. Mm-hmm. So as an act of humanity and an act of common sense, we withdrew that individual from the unit, even though technically I wasn't supposed to do that. And these are some of the ones and twos that can get caught in the cracks without legislation like this to protect the individual. They could end up in between coverages and then try to reapply, and guess what happens? Something within the family doesn't get taken care of. It isn't so much the individual, because once he or she is mobilized federally, they're going to be covered and pretty much where it can be handled. It's the family left home, or that gap in coverage, or on state active duty, nobody's covering them. I mean, if they get dropped off their health and coverage, then the family is without. And the individual, quite frankly, can only file a claim against the state for being injured while working on state active. It's a mess doing things like that. You get governors and congressmen and senators involved, and it takes you a year, and people suffer. So even though that wouldn't be a majority of the individuals, there's a significant impact to families and the employee themselves when they get dropped off health insurance coverage for any reason.
Senator Brown.
This is actually off topic, but since you're here, I figured I'd take the opportunity. I have a friend, a fellow I went to high school with, that's trying to get into the Naval Reserves, and he's struggling a bit because of how old he is. And I was just curious whether the National Guard has an age limit on the upper end as opposed to the lower end.
Jack.
Yeah. How did you know?
Is that the one?
We've
worked it.
We got him first. We passed him off to the Naval Reserve because they are more lenient than the Army is.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Now, we would love to have him.
Oh.
That's not the cartoon writer, is it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So he's going to do the...
Why didn't you...
Stars and Stripes is the good one.
Chair Fisher, I just want to make another point that I didn't know this going in, but those individuals that were called up to fight the forest fires last summer, this state was burning up. It's my understanding that after they were called up and they realized that their insurance situation was, they sent them back home, rather than a few of them, which is too bad, because as you remember, when our state was burning up, all of us remember that we needed all the people we could get. So that issue is also here, although that is not in this bill. I did not put that part in this bill either, because I didn't know about it, or at least I didn't know enough to put it in the bill. So the bill is the issue of the mandate versus permissive. It's also the issue of whether or not you want guards persons who are called up to fight, whether it's floods, state active duty, floods, disasters in our states, fire, whether or not they should also maybe be part of this piece of legislation.
Senator Morse.
Thank you. What kind of a pay differential? So if you're making $50,000 working for the state, what would you be making working while you're called up? I mean, you're... Okay, what I'm getting at is the least we can do is pay the insurance, because there is a huge loss in terms of pay to the family, and so I think that is the least we can do.
Yeah, Chair Fisher, Senator Morsetti, we had an individual for Intel that was making $105,000, $110,000 a year. He came in on E6 pay. I think he dropped to 40. Something, 45, something in that area. That was an Air Guard instance. You're paid upon the rank. If you're a Sergeant E5, that's what you're paid. If you're a captain, you're paid captain's pay on active duty. And so sometimes there's a significant differential. Sometimes it's close. But the health insurance is still a driving factor, which can draw somebody, as we all know, what health costs can balloon to just by looking at the Oregon health plan alone. We know what health costs can balloon to if you have no coverage. Or if you're dropped off coverage through no fault of your own, you're just serving your state or you're serving your nation, I think it's a very equitable bill.
Senator Farnell.
Yeah, I just want to say, Senator Courtney, that I think your first sentence in your testimony is Senate Bill 9 is simple. I think that's one of the things that we have a tendency to kind of put our fingerprints on everything and make things more difficult than they are. I think it is a simple bill that allows people, whether they're wherever they are, to comply with this. And certainly, if they don't, there's always time to mandate. But when we get into mandates, we get into things where we could have issues with counties, et cetera. And when we get into that, I think your idea of keeping it simple is excellent. Thank you.
Shelley Honeywell, do you wish to explain a little bit about what this does or doesn't do as far as the potential financial impact?
They're going to leave you up there and all by yourself.
Yeah, we're all the way. We're right behind.
They got you back.
Mr. Chair and committee members, I'm Shalee Honeywell, and I'm a senior human resource analyst with the Department of Administrative Services. I think that what's most important is I don't have an answer that would be completely conclusive for you. Things are budgeted as far as health insurance for state employees. However, there's multiple ways to use positions and do different things within the state, and so those numbers would need to be put together and ran with regards to if you mandated the health insurance.
I had a question. If someone goes into and is called into active duty and it's for a short period of months, 6 weeks, 2 months, something like that, is their job necessarily filled, or are they just taking off the roles and the job just lump along, do the best they can, or somebody else kind of fills in until they get back?
Chair Fisher, what happens is the position is considered filled still with the employee that is on military leave. They're coded within the system as being on leave without pay, military duty. However, there are alternative options to that a position may be double filled to get the work done, or a temporary employee brought in to also get the work done upon leave. Upon the employee's return, however, off of the leave without pay for military duty, they are put back into their position.
And I would surmise they're put back into position with all the benefits they had prior to that. They would come on off of the TRICARE and back into the state care, so that would be another transfer of treatments. And
Chair Fisher, you would be correct. They would be brought back into the system under the health care that they were on when they left the system. When you say benefits, there's quite a few benefits that they would be brought back into, including vacation accruals and other things like that also.
What about let's see. If they are brought back then into the state program, their families brought back in with no time for or no penalty for existing pre-existing conditions or anything like that. They're brought back in on their health care and everything just as though they had not left.
Chair Fisher, that is correct. Just as like family medical leave, they're brought back into the program just as from the point that they left, exactly the same, their family and themselves, if they were covered like that when they left.
Mm-hmm. Senator Brown.
So I'm actually glad you raised the family leave issue. So are people then without, people who take family leave also without health insurance during the time they're off? It's treated differently, isn't it?
Chair Fisher and Senator Brown, you're absolutely correct. It is treated differently. Because of the law mandating, they're covered during that time mm-hmm. under family medical leave. Mm-hmm.
Senator Burdick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. What about the life insurance? What happens to life insurance during this gap in service?
Chair Fisher and Senator Burdick, the life insurance is a continuation based upon the employee paying the premium. So if they choose to continue paying the premium for life insurance, they can maintain their life insurance. However, if they choose not to, then their life insurance would be dropped.
Okay, but they have no such option. They couldn't just pay the premium for the health insurance. Could they?
It would depend on. No, I mean, they wouldn't just continue the payment. There's a COBRA. We allow up to 18 months by policy for them to continue payment of their premiums if they choose to pay the premiums by policy again for state employees only.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Mr.
Yes,
Chair,
Senator
just
Brown.
To follow up on Senator Burdick's question, but COBRA would apply to employees leaving the state as well. It applies to everyone. So there's no special exemption for military.
And it has an 18-month
right, tail.
Yeah.
That is correct.
And it's also quite costly, I'm sure, compared to life insurance premiums. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Thank you.
Very expensive.
What...
He looks
right away
to me.
So you wouldn't have, of course, obviously, any chance to go over just how much this would be for 39 employees. It'd have to be figured on the basis of whatever cost that care or that coverage was at that point in time.
Chair Fisher, that is correct. Because we have both represented and unrepresented employees, and based upon what program you've chosen as your benefit program, if you're covered individually or your family covered, the cost could be different. If we were looking at just specifically those 39 employees, I believe that there is a overall budget number that is used, but I don't have those figures with me today.
Further questions? Thank you very much. I did have one more question. What
yes.
is there in this bill? Now, I just read it as a non-legal trained person as employers, period. But as I'm hearing it, it sounds like it's only for state employees. Now, is this one of these references to the ORSs, is that strictly for state employees?
Chair Fisher, under ORS 408, which is being amended, it's referring to public officers and employees. And for state call-ups, if Colonel Caldwell would like to correct me. The language for them being called up is in ORS 399. So there are two separate statutory references when there's a state call-up versus here it's a federal call-up for public officers and employees.
Mm-hmm. So we're only dealing with federal call-up with this, and the amendment would do for state call-up?
Chair Fisher, that would be correct.
Okay.
Now I'm confused, Mr. Chairman.
I just read it and looked at it as all employers, and I'm thinking, why would it have to be written? I mean, if a private employee wanted to give this to someone, why put it in the law that he made?
The state call-up versus a federal call-up. I thought I understood.
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, currently, when the governor calls us a state active duty, he does that under the offices of the commander-in-chief of the militia. But we wear two hats in the National Guard. When you join the National Guard, you join the National Guard of the state of Oregon and the National Guard of the United States. So we're not fish or fowl, we're both. And we can go either way. And that allows the president the authority then to call us off of state active duty or off of state service under Title 32 of the U.S. Code and bring us onto Title 10, which is full-time federal duty, which is what we're really discussing here. What we saw, and it was the opportunity to perhaps correct what we noticed last summer when the governor called us under state active duty, under his authority as commander-in-chief of the militia, and the Oregon National Guard is the militia, to call us to duty. We said, well, this is an opportunity. Maybe we could use this as a vehicle to fix 399 as well. If it's going to muddy the water, we just assume you pass the bill, and we'll either look for another one or ask one of you good folks to offer something up to help try to fix that 399. This bill allows the state agency to elect to pay this discussion we've had on health care. It doesn't tell them they have to. It's up to the state agency, which then falls to DAS then to generate some rules that we would have to deal with, as all state agencies would have to deal with, and how is this employed and when is it employed, yada, yada, yada. So it allows that discourse or that discussion to occur and that debate to ensue inside of the bureaucracy as opposed to being mandated by the legislature, which I think what Senator Courtney, I don't want to speak for him, but I think that's what he wanted, was to allow the bureaucracy then to, you know, find its own level. And we're okay with that. We don't have any problem with that. We just saw an opportunity. If we could fix the state active duty piece, we thought it would be a good opportunity to do it.
And on the state active duty component, from the policy perspective, I think Colonel Caldwell has done a great job in expressing the fact that when we talk about these 39 employees, when we talk about, you know, over 1,000 employees that could be called up during the fire season, during the summertime, if they're state employees, when they're on active duty, they're still state employees. And so to take them off of their medical or after 31 days, when they're still a state employee, and we would cover them as a state employee. And so I think that's why bringing it forward is very important now.
We have other benefits in the statutory language you may be familiar with. Probably the most significant one is that if you're a public employee in the state of Oregon, you're allowed 15 days of leave over and above your own normal leave to serve in the National Guard or the reserve components. And that's been on the books probably for 50 years, probably since World War II. It's the most significant benefit that we get other than I would tell you that's the most significant benefit we get financially and monetarily from the state of Oregon. Guards members get, other than state tuition assistance, which we've not been able to do because of budget problems. So that beyond that, we get a license plate for $2. I think you can change your license plate, and I'm going to have to go a ways to find any more. So... Oh, and we don't have to serve on juries, too.
When they go on state active duty, what happens to their payroll? Because you say they're still state employees. Do they get their same state payroll, or do they go on to a different payroll according to what the National Guard pays?
Mr. Chairman, when they come on state active duty, and it's, again part of the statutory language in 399, they come on as at their rank, and they come on at their federal rank, which is both a federal and state rank, like I told you before. They have one rank, and they're paid at the top of that scale. In each instance, each rank that we have, there's a multitude based on years of service of pay grades. In order to simplify the process, we asked the legislature two sessions ago, maybe three now, to streamline that process so we could use one pay only. But for purposes of state employee consideration, they are considered, and I think it says so in the statute, that they're considered temporary state employees, which makes them ineligible for any benefits from health care, retirement, or anything of the sort. So that's how the state looks at them from DAS's standpoint. Which, again, is problematic if you are a state employee and you get called up, then you have that conflict.
It would be nice if we could get do this if we could get the federal to give us their TRICARE money for each one of those and at least help us out that much.
Mr. Chairman, I know that there's discussion at the federal level on this subject. The problem is going to be is it probably won't get fixed till October at the earliest. And again, it's just out of that 39, I'll bet you that we're probably talking less than five that are really going to see this as something they really need desperately because of their particular circumstance. As the general mentioned earlier about the one individual who had a child who was extremely ill. So we try to avoid these circumstances if we can.
Thank you very much. I guess probably what we need to do is to proceed with having an amendment drafted that would cover this.
For the record, Mr. Chair, let me clarify that you want an amendment to include state call-ups.
Yes.
That correct? And that's it.
And that we need to get a fiscal impact also on.
Yes. Mr. Chair?
Yes, Senator Brown.
I think we'd like to see an amendment as well, though, make it mandatory.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, make them separate amendments.
No problem.
Good.
Okay.
Thank you, folks, for coming. Is there anyone else that wished to testify on this bill? Hearing no further voice in need of testimony, we will be adjourned.
That'll save Mr. Brown from doing the minority report.